Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis.
And Benjamin Holden.
Today's episode has a surprise.
Yes, today's episode does have a surprise, Lucy Davis. You are correct. So I just thought we are in, is it season four now? Season four?
We're well in season four.
Yes, but I thought we've been building up the set and unfortunately again today I can't have a monster drink just because my stomach's been quite bad again.
I think that's actually better for you
green,
though.
Peppermint tea.
Is it green tea?
Peppermint tea, you're right.
Peppermint tea is actually, I think, a really good tea choice for peppermint your stomach. Tea.
So today, before we get into the other stuff, we've got a big surprise. We've got an addition to the podcast set.
What do you mean an addition though?
We've got an addition to the
podcast
set. I
know it's right behind me, basically. Yeah.
If you're watching, Lucy hasn't seen what's behind us. So if you're watching the YouTube channel now, you'll be able to see what is behind Lucy.
Yeah, and if you're not, pause what you're on now and go to the YouTube video. I'm really nervous. I feel like it's like on me.
Okay.
It's like when I thought that was a dildo.
So this is on Lucy's side of the desk. Little gift that I bought.
Do I turn around now?
Ready?
Should I shut my eyes?
No, I'm going to count down to three and then you can look. Three, two, one.
So good! Oh my God!
So it's signed by The Rock.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. It's signed by Auli Carvalho as well. And Tamara Morrison, Jeremy Clement, and Nicole Schwenziger.
Oh my God, I was not expecting that. Do you know what I was expecting? I thought it was going to be our podcast picture on a canvas.
So I got it shipped over from America about a week ago.
Oh, it's really great.
There's your certificate of authenticity. That's The Rock signature. Dwayne Johnson, how sick is that?
This is the best thing ever. It feels like Christmas. What the hell? That is honestly, I'm in shock. I really thought it was going to be our podcast logo blown up because you said you were going to get that done. Wow.
How cool is
it? I'm friends with The Rock.
How amazing is that?
That is unbelievable, guys. If you're literally, Cal, how much can you see it on the, can you see it? Oh my God, guys, if you're not on the YouTube channel, go across because...
I thought it was cool anyway, just because the colours went for the Not So Fit Couple sign, but then obviously the big man signed it as well. That has been in The Rock's hands.
I really feel like it's given a lot to the office and the podcast studio as well.
And also, obviously, Moana's like your favourite Disney film.
It is my favourite Disney film. I don't know what to do with my certificate. Should I frame this one as well and just put that
on? I was considering doing that and putting it underneath or putting it somewhere.
Wow. This is really a lot for me to absorb. I think I need a break. Oh my God, I really thought I knew what it was and I thought it was the white picture of the podcast blown up, the one that we had designed.
So you're not expecting it?
It's great, no? What do you mean?
Add some character and color, doesn't it, to the room.
Yeah, well, it also kind of goes really well with the room because if you have seen our office and podcast set up before, we've got obviously the blue color of the podcast and the walls are kind of a dark, smoky gray. But then we have the wooden panels and then this just goes so well.
Yes. So if anyone who's not watching on YouTube, it is a huge blow up poster framed of the Moana art for the movie. Wow. It's signed by The Rock and then also the main voice who does Moana, who is Auli Carvalho, I think you say it. And there's a couple of us, like the pig signed it. There's a few other ones as well. The pig signed it.
That was a really great surprise. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
I love that. Oh my gosh, now we need to say who today's episode is sponsored by.
And
God, you've really blown me away.
Today's,
oh gosh, this is nearly empty.
Is it really? Yeah. Today's episode is sponsored by Coro. Again, I'm having the kombucha instead of Monster again because the kombucha seems to sit quite well with my IBS symptoms at the moment where this Monster keeps upsetting us. So I have a nice, again, Lucy's pouring absolute peasant portions.
No, it's because I want
a decent glass. We're not doing taste testing. Pour me a glass.
No, but we don't have any left.
Yeah,
we've gone through it really quick. Oh no, it is really good though. I mean, I've had kombucha for maybe like 2 years now. I just have it all the time, and I do believe it has health benefits. I really, really like kombucha. I think it sits really well in your stomach. And this one, I actually don't think this one is flavored, or it's got a slight ginger tinge, maybe. But it's actually really nice because it's not too fizzy where it makes you feel like it's going to come out your nose.
Yeah,
you ever had that?
Yeah, I don't like that.
It comes out your nose.
And of course, we've got the snacks. Our policy.
I can't remember how long ago we filmed the other app, but that was full. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll know how quickly we've gone through those little peanut butter brittle things. That's empty. That's, you know, I think that just highlights how much we like we like the little nibbles and the products. And so, but we do have a discount code.
Not so fit five.
If you want to grab a discount at Coro, like we really, really do rate them.
I had to put another order in this morning. You should see how much chocolate stuff I've ordered. It's insane.
That might arrive when we're away.
You'll have to get more of those glass jars, put more of those chocolates in because I ordered chocolate apricots, chocolate strawberries. I ordered the cookie clusters, the ones that we had first time.
Yes.
They're unbelievable.
Devoured.
Salted honey coated peanuts. White chocolate covered salted caramel pretzel that I ordered.
Yeah. So they've obviously had a restock because we tried to order a lot of stuff last time. It just shows how popular like everything is because the stuff just goes really quick.
And the vanilla cinnamon peanut butter.
Oh my God.
Almond butter.
Yeah, delicious. So we'll leave a link and the discount code below if you want to grab those before they get out of stock. Because I think last time we spoke about them, a lot of the products actually went out of stock real quick. So get your hands on those super quick.
Also, we had a question about the challenge. You don't have to be the challenges into our third week. You don't have to be...
The My Coach School app challenge.
Yeah, you don't have to be on the challenge or join the app. You can join the app at any time and join any of the programs, whether it's a basic program, one of the build and run programs, one of the lifting based strength programs, whatever it may be, you can join one of the programs at any time. And again, you can get a 7-day trial by using the code NOTSOFIT20. On the Micro School app, which again will be linked in the podcast description notes and the YouTube channel.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with the app. Like, obviously, we host the podcast, Lucy. We do the challenges because it's for accountability. It's nice for members to do everything together. But in terms of the app itself, like, it's your personal trainer in your pocket to be with you every single day. So you can join the app whenever you wish. And obviously, as Ben says, start on a 7-day free trial and then just see how you get on. We won't be offended if you don't like it, but you will. So there you go.
So today's episode, we're going to do a bit of a Q&A again. We've had some really good questions this week, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Mine are quite fitness. Actually, I think mine are all fitness specific.
That's probably quite
today.
A nice mix then, because mine are a little bit mindset-y as well. So we've got fitness and mindset, which is what the podcast is about.
Rock, ready? Paper, scissors. So we're going to go.
On go.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Go.
Go.
Yeah, ready? 3, 2, 1, go. 3, 2, 1, go.
No. I always win.
Yeah, well, now it's my turn.
Well, Ben's going to go first, which means he gets asked his question first. What we like to do with these as well is I don't know Ben's questions. Yep. So when he actually asks, and he doesn't know mine. So when we ask each other, we're kind of thinking off our own self in terms of questions we ask each other. But then we have a lot of research and show notes on the ones we've actually done for ourselves.
So first question that came over for the podcast is... How do I stop the perfectionist tendencies? I feel like you're quite a good person to answer this though, kind of, because you are somewhat of a perfectionist when it comes to tasks and doing things.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely always been a perfectionist and I didn't have therapy just for that. I had therapy for anxiety as well and have done for a while. But the whole thing about being a perfectionist is everything's quite particular. Like, I'm a very particular person in terms of organization, getting things done, having tasks and having it all set out. And when you're a perfectionist, when something doesn't go quite to plan, you kind of freak out and you think the world is literally turned against you. And it could be something as simple as the meeting's been moved back half an hour. And I'm like, guys, I don't know, to panic, the meeting's been moved back half an hour, like, what are we gonna do? And it's actually really difficult because when you're very set in your own ways, it is difficult sometimes to unpractice that, but I'm quite lucky because I work with Ben and Cal, who are not perfectionists. They're still organized, but they're not perfectionists. So you don't essentially get that stressed if something doesn't like instantly happen or if something changes, if a trend happens and you react to it. And I've learned that off you two actually really well and become a lot more relaxed. I think that's one of the best things you actually can do is talk to someone who actually isn't and pick up on some of their habits. Like my sister, for example, is very laid back.
Yeah, you and your sister like chalk and cheese.
Yeah,
you're two opposites. But then you and your mum and dad are very much the same where your dad's very chilled to the point of fall over.
Yeah,
and then
horizontal.
Your mum's more like you are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, I guess it balances itself out as well.
Yeah, I think it's just... Also, I think one of the things actually... I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think sometimes when you are a perfectionist, it can negatively affect your life sometimes.
Yeah.
Has leaps of benefits. It really does, like organization, being able to get things done, tasks, priorities, having a growth mindset, however, can be really restrictive when things change. So be open with your mindset and kind of realize that you are a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And then people can help you, they can talk to you. I mean, it doesn't always help, but I think opening up and actually having conversations with other people is really, really important. So I think the communication element, I mean, I probably can't give the best tips because I think it's quite personal.
Because you are a bit of a perfectionist.
Because I am a perfectionist and I still struggle with it now. So I would actually be interested to see. Give us all your tips.
So I've made some notes based on obviously seeing it from an external point of view because I'm not really a perfectionist.
No, you're not.
I just don't give a shit, really.
No, I think you give a shit.
I give a shit, but like, I'm not a perfectionist.
I'm going to actually... Do you know what the definition is?
No, but... I've viewed this from two different perspectives because some people are perfectionists when it comes to their health and fitness and their body and exercise and training, diet. Some people are perfectionists when it comes to work, task completion and that element of their life. So I think a lot of it comes down to when people are looking at bodies, insecurities, diet, nutrition, training. A lot of that comes down to self-care, I believe, and not enough self-love. I think that's where a lot of it can stem from, because how many times do we like love something in life, whether it's clothes, work, whatever it is, but we believe we're not good enough for it because an item or whatever it is something that we really value, or it's something that we've wanted in life, but we don't feel worthy of it because we're not perfect enough for that object or that item or that exercise or that task or whatever it may be. And that's where the comments we give ourselves are very, very important. Like, for example, I don't know if you've ever done it before, but I definitely have, where I've, in a store, for example, I'm buying a top. I used to do it with white t-shirts all the time, by the way, because I hated white t-shirts sitting on my chest because for the pectus. So I'd be like, oh yeah, it looks great. Love that top. Wanting to buy it. I'd go and try it on and be like, I just look like a piece of shit in it. I look terrible in it. My body's not good enough to wear it. And I'm sure other people get it with like man boobs, or it looks a bit tight around the stomach, or I look like a bag of shit in this. And you do it when you go to the changing room. That's one of the examples I can think of, is where you value an item, you think that's nice, and then you don't feel good enough for it. And then you let it sabotage your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you let your thoughts get on top of you and you start picking apart holes in yourself, because you don't think you're worthy of something. I mean, that's an underlying perfectionist thing when it comes to your body, the way that you look, the way that you feel. And I think also that comes down from a very young age, where we're led to believe that success comes down to having the perfect skin, perfect body, perfect features, perfect outcomes.
Yeah, I think one of the things on that as well, because I actually looked at the definition. I mean, I'm not a pure perfectionist, as in like I'm not fully, there's definitely traits.
I think you'll probably find a lot of people on like a scale.
Yeah, so a perfectionist is someone who has a personality that strives for flawlessness. This is often accomplished through fixation on imperfections, trying to control situations, working hard, or being self-critical of yourself. So that's one of the things that you literally just said there, is perfectionists tend to spot mistakes and imperfections rather than looking more, I guess, at the positives in certain outcomes. So that t-shirt example, you love the t-shirt, you put it on, but then you're looking at imperfections of yourself.
Yeah.
It's obviously not helpful for anyone, because there's definitely nothing wrong with putting on the t-shirt and you would look great in it.
Yeah.
But that's your own mind.
Mind playing tricks on you, picking your paw. And that's where it's all about redefining the body ideal and seeing failure as a must in order to win. I think when you're in the perfectionist mindset, you see failure as the worst thing in the world. But if you look at the most successful people in the world, and especially for me, I failed tons of times in business, training, workouts, whatever it may be. I don't know if you've seen that photo of like Disney, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, when they're starting their companies and like little sheds, they failed. I don't know how many times Walt Disney failed at doing stuff. I think there's an image of it online you can pull up and see. And it's showing the failures of big entrepreneurs or people who have won big in life or business or whatever that has been, and how many failures they've had along the way. I think one of the other big ones is the Colonel for KFC. I think he took the idea of KFC to investors. It must have been over 40, 50 times, and he got knocked back loads of times because he said it was crap. And look at where KFC is in terms of fast food restaurants now. So there's going to be a lot of failures along the way. And I think learning to realize that failures are a must and are very valuable is a realization in itself that you don't need to be perfect and get it right first time.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things as well with perfectionism is people put a lot of pressure on themselves to perform or to do certain things. And what you have to remember is that the person who pressurizes you the most is yourself. You are the person who puts self, what's that word?
Self-doubt.
No, more so, I guess, be kinder to yourself and practice self-acceptance. And just don't be too unrealistic and put these horrible, unrealistic expectations and pressures on yourself because you're the person who's doing it. That is something that I do so much of the time. However, something really interesting, and I am the opposite to this. Perfectionists can be notorious procrastinators, giving themselves an excuse to slack off and they can't ensure that they do their work perfectly. Whereas I'm the opposite to that. I'm the least procrastinator. I would just get things done. So it's really interesting that you can definitely have traits or be in both realms, because I am I say you're more of a procrastinator than me.
I'm a procrastinator. We did a podcast on procrastination. I'm a big procrastinator.
Yeah.
That's because not me being perfect. I just use other distractions to get away from the task that I'm supposed to be doing because it's easier.
Yeah.
But me and Carl were speaking about this before. For a lot of people, it's like a self-defense mechanism in terms of when you pull a perfectionist card, basically it can almost be a way of stopping us from being hurt, because when you take action on something, that then makes you vulnerable. And if we don't take any action, then we can't open ourselves up to be criticized or to be wrong.
Yeah.
So therefore using the perfectionist card will stop you from taking action.
Yeah. So kind of like an excuse.
Yeah, it's like an excuse, but more of a self-defense mechanism, because you don't want to be opened up to be hurt. So you're like, I didn't want to do that because I couldn't do it properly. I couldn't be all in on it. I didn't want to do that course because I couldn't apply my time to it properly. Mm. And I wanted to do it properly. That's the big one you hear quite often, isn't it?
Yeah, I need to do it like 100%. Yeah.
And that's almost that all or nothing mentality of what that comes into it. That you don't allow for any gray area.
Mm.
Magic's in the gray.
Well, that's really interesting. That was actually a really good question, because it can help a lot of people in different ways, I think, because you don't have to categorize yourself as a perfectionist. You can have traits of different things, and that's obviously an important one to take note of, because mine's definitely the one where I put so much pressure on myself to do things really, really well that there's like no room for error.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting way better at erroring and failing. Failing's great.
I think we all think that we want things that we don't. What I mean by that is we think we want unbelievable abs. We don't. We think we want to be absolutely shredded out of our minds. We don't. We think you want like massive biceps, tiny waist, big boobs, massive arse. We don't. Like at the end of the day, most people just want to be a little bit more confident. Most people want to be a bit healthier, look good. Look good and be happy.
Yeah.
We all think that we want the extreme, but when it boils down to it, we don't.
Yeah, that was really nice. That was like a little poem. You could write that up.
Shall I? You get tattooed on my ass.
Hey, no, you've already got one of those.
It wasn't a poem.
It was not a poem.
There's some shit all in Greece.
That's so loud, but Ben, Ben's tattoo on his bottom is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Shall I get out and show you that?
No, absolutely not. Falaraki.
Yeah, it's Falaraki, but half it's come off because when I was on the plane, it rubbed off my arse.
Falaraki. Anyway, okay, so question number two, which is
number one for you.
Number one for me, yeah. What's the most... Actually, this is a brilliant question. It's kind of sport-related, kind of not, so I really wanted to include it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important lesson you've learned in life due to sports and working out, but as a young kid? So
wow,
kind
of, that's a cool, good question.
Because we both grew up in sport. We did. Well, our parents put us into sport. God, that sounds awful. We did sport from a young age.
Yeah. God, that's a hard question to answer.
Did you want me to go first just to give you a bit of...
No, because I'll be conflicted by the old narrative. It's the biggest thing I learnt from sport.
Yeah. Also, when you're... I know, obviously, you're going back like... 20, 25 years. We talk about when you're kids and you know you get involved in sport from a young age.
probably that's really tough.
Did you want me to go first?
No.
I think yours would be, you've spoken to me about it before, which is why I picked the question. We'll have the same answer. It's the exact same thing we both spoke about, and we said when we have kids, we'd want them to learn the same lesson.
Go on then.
So we got into sport really young. You were probably, what, 4 or 5?
Yeah,
I was like 2 or 3. And...
Right, start doing me, don't you, at every angle.
I was probably 2 or 3. I was super young, though. It teaches you to lose. You learn to fail. And it doesn't really matter to what extent. Because we spoke about it before in terms of when they give kids like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th place ribbons, that doesn't really teach you to lose. And that can sound really harsh from my perspective. However, one of the most valuable things that I learned as a kid and a skill is learning to lose, because it helps you when you get to the age that we are now.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this before, haven't we? Because if the first time that you lose anything in life is at a later stage, that's where there's a lot on the line.
Yeah.
Mortgage, finance, cars, money, business, jobs, relationships, businesses. There's a lot more riding on that. And if you've never experienced any losses in life, when it gets to that point, then you're in for a fucking rude awakening. So I think that's probably one of the best points you've made is definitely that losses. I lost quite a few things when I was a kid, and I first used to get choked up and start crying, acting like a little bitch about it. And then I was told about the importance of losing and why it's good to lose. And also remember that for next time when it comes to it, like, remember that hurt. Like, you're still climbing that mountain. You're still trying to climb to the top and take the number one spot. And you got to remain hungry to get there. So I think losing teaches you a lot, because then when I go into school, when I go into classes and stuff, you've experienced losing. You know what that feeling's like. You know how to deal with it instead of getting in a bitch fit about it.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things that I guess picked up on, and the thing that kept cropping up when I was looking into this question more, because obviously we're not parents yet, so we can't say from that perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
But talking from how we grew up in sport and our parents put us into multiple sports and we kind of found the one that we enjoyed the most. With being in sport, you can understand as a kid that you're not going to be the best at everything. There's going to be kids who are faster, stronger, more coordinated, balanced. A kid might be really good at archery and then someone else might be really good at sprinting or whatever it is. And then if or when a child fails, whatever you want to call it, it allows them to have the skill of empathy and the experience of losing. So even if you bring that to now or last year when our app didn't launch, essentially had a failed launch, I think we coped pretty well with it, to be honest, considering we were building this app for 14 months and we were told on the day it wasn't going to launch. I had a little cry. We were just like gobsmacked, and then we just picked ourselves up and we were able to cope with that situation. And that's a real life situation. And I personally think that's from, I did a lot of sport as a kid. Again, though, it's really hard because it might be biased because I'm speaking from someone who grew up in sport.
Yeah, but you're trying to evaluate your life experience and where you've learned to be able to deal with those losses from.
Yeah.
And chain of thoughts has completely gone out.
But it is a really interesting concept, isn't it? And it could be bias coming from us because we have always had sport in our lives and to some extent.
I think one thing was with schools and stuff as well, though, is I don't agree with the whole 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th place trophies. I don't think that teaches anything to anyone. I don't think it really acts as a motivation. I don't think it really acts as a drive to do better next time, because they're like, I'm going to get a trophy anyway. It doesn't matter where I come.
Yeah.
And the other way in which I think kids are sometimes set up to fail is that they're not given a direction in to pursuing the things that they're good at, and what their talents and their skills are maybe more geared towards. It's just like a case of a crack on anyway. I mean, I'm all about people continuing to try and working hard, but I personally think, and this may seem strange to some people, is that if there's something that you're not very good at and you've tried and tried, fuck it off. Put your time and energy into the things that you're good at. Don't try and be the... What's the terminology? Yeah, don't try and be the jack of all trades. Try and focus on and be niched into the things that you're good at, because you'll get far more levels of success by doing that. And if you look at people in the modern world, people who have built businesses, it's being mega niched into something and pouring your energy and time into something that you're good at and leaving the things that you're not good at, because you don't need to be good at absolutely everything.
Yeah.
You don't need to be great at science, English, maths. Like, I think the education system still fails children and the fact that they believe they need to be good at absolutely everything, and they fail at one thing, well, that's life over. No, it's not. I was probably bang average at everything in school, and there's a lot of kids who were in school who were pretty shit at a lot of things but really good at one or two things, and they were never kind of really coached or taught to really hone those skills in to one specific area. And I think if they would have done, they would have done a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because even so, you have kids like sport who are really good at sport, or really good at music, really good at languages. They should hone in on those things because they're really good at them and they probably really enjoy them. Like, I hated maths. I really, really struggled. Honestly, add two and two and I'm thinking, fucking hell, is it seven? As a kid, I really struggled. And even through high school and things, maths was the one that I really, really struggled with. But obviously, I was really sporty, so I put a lot of time into sport.
Yeah.
And my dad, for example, he plays guitar, and he bought me and Meg guitars when we were younger, and we did our guitar exams. Hated it. I couldn't we still got the guitar sat at home, and I'm just thinking, oh my god, I could not vibe with the guitar. Yeah. Did the exams, was so nervous. I did the recorder, and it just wasn't for me. And there were some kids who were so musically gifted. I was like, you do that, I'll do the sport side of things. And that is really important, because you do want your kid to get enjoyment out of it. Yeah. And not feeling that pressure from a young age. Because I really wish I did not do those guitar exams. God, I can't remember it. My dad went to me yesterday, he was home, he was like, do you remember anything? I was like, no, dad.
I cannot imagine you even playing a guitar, you know.
I've got an electric guitar as well.
Look at the way you're strumming now.
What do you mean?
There's no musical talent that flow through your veins whatsoever.
I also did the recorder. I really
that's not even an instrument. The triangle is not an instrument.
No, that it's gets not. Given
that's
to
that's for the kid who's at the back who can do fuck well. So that was me standing at the back of a triangle. Ben, just hold this and just hit at the back and smile.
Yeah, so sorry, the point of this whole thing was that it is very, very important to lose.
Yeah.
In what, I guess, not even just sport, because that's what sport taught me.
Yeah.
But in any instance, I think if you are a parent listening to this, it's okay that your kid loses something or fails, because it's going to teach them a lot of lessons.
Yeah.
As they move through life and in later life.
Yeah, I'm still a bad loser now, but I'm really better.
I'm not the best loser.
I think that's because you're competitive though for sport. Again, that's something that teaches you.
Yeah.
Okay, question number two for me. Are there any exercises that are a waste of time?
Really just throwing it out there. Big question.
Big question.
Waste of time exercises. I believe... Oh, I can't even think off the top. And I know there is definitely... Okay.
Do you want me just to kind of help you phrase this question?
Yeah.
For me personally, I don't think that there's any movement that is going to be a waste of time, full stop. However, there can be exercise that will be a waste of time relevant to your goals. So, for example, if your goal is to become aerobically fitter, okay?
Yeah.
Why are you doing reverse banded Smith machine press for 20 reps twice a week? Your goal is to get as strong as possible through bench, squat, deadlift. Okay. Why are you starting each lower session doing leg extensions for 20 reps?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I don't think you can categorically say there's an exercise which is a waste of time, full stop, but I think there's definitely exercise which is like,
I guess one that I don't really vibe with is more of like the fad ones that you see on Instagram where people have created an exercise and called it like a lunge squat, burpee squat press thing.
Yeah.
So they say this is an exercise. I'm like, but that is not it. That is not an exercise. You've put three exercises, a burpee, a squat and press, and a lunge into one exercise. That I don't agree with because I'm like, you're not actually doing exercise. You're doing a sequence of three in one and called it something.
Well, the reason why that's bullshit as well is because if you're holding the barbell like you can press with, you categorically are not getting any real tension with it for lunging with it, are you?
Yeah.
Or squatting with it, because you're not holding enough load if you can press it overhead.
Yeah.
So stop being a wanker.
And a lot of the time people like, it's part of a HIIT class or stuff like that. I think I understand. However, this is where injuries can start to happen when people are throwing weights around in an with incorrect form. Mm-hmm. So I don't agree with that. And then also the one that I can't really, I get it, some people are just moving, is when you're holding dumbbells and you're punching. It's not really doing a lot, is it really? I get it, you know, you're working your shoulders, but also I don't understand it. I don't understand why. Yeah, increase your heart rate.
I mean,
but why? That's a general question. You know what?
I could be wrong. I've never even seen any boxers doing that. You know, professional boxers. I could be wrong. I've never seen many holding dumbbells doing it, because I can't imagine it being great for your shoulder.
No, I can't. So I think you always see it in like the, I don't know what they're called, like box hit classes. Yeah. I'm thinking, okay, maybe to increase your heart rate and it burns your shoulders, but could you not just do shoulder press?
Yeah.
So that's probably for me, they're the ones that I'm just a bit.
Okay. I've got some examples, and there are some movements that are more risky than mm-hmm. others. And what I mean by that is sometimes it's good if you're going to go do an exercise and think, what is the risk versus reward here when I'm doing this exercise?
Yeah.
So examples, anything behind the neck. So behind the neck press, behind the neck pull down. Why? Why are you doing that? There's no bigger reward for you doing that than there is just doing it in front, where there's less risk, where you're putting your rotator cuffs in less of a vulnerable position, where probably for 90% of the people, mobility doesn't even allow them to get it behind their head properly. Mm. Leave it alone.
Why do they do it then? Just because they see it on Instagram and probably. YouTube and
yeah, things. I mean, there's some benefits of doing behind the neck stuff, but majority of people do not have the mobility, the strength in the rotator cuffs and the stabilizing muscle groups to be able to even do it. And plus, you can't put as much load for it either, so you're just capping yourself straight away.
Yeah, I think that would be super.
Dumbbell kickbacks.
A dumbbell kickback? What's that?
Dumbbell tricep kickback.
Oh.
I'd argue do a cable.
Yeah.
Just because you're having to hold your shoulder up again and do them. I mean, it's not the worst exercise. I'm just trying to offer better advice. Mm-hmm. Do a cable instead. Walking up a stairmaster doing glute kickbacks.
Yeah, that's...
Why?
If you're trying to grow your glutes doing that. Oh, there was a big argument on this. Someone put a post up about this, one of my friends actually, and I was backing 100% because she said if you're doing kickbacks whilst walking on a stepper, yeah, you're going to feel your glutes because you're kicking back, but you're not going to grow your glutes. You're actually doing a form of cardio.
Yeah.
They're completely conflicting, and also you're not actually lifting a resistance.
Yeah.
And there was so much like hit back from obviously the people who do that because it looks good on Instagram.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this is it's going to challenge people's personal narratives.
Yeah.
And you've got to separate that when it comes to your ego and then looking at, okay, it doesn't actually fucking work. Doesn't matter how much I like it. There's better alternatives out there for me, and that's one of them. I mean, charging up and down a stairmaster, kicking your legs back isn't rewarding if you, one, want to grow your glutes, or two, you're looking to burn fat. Because if you're on a stairmaster to burn fat, you can probably go faster and longer if you don't do the kickbacks, and you're probably going to get more glute growth if you just do kickbacks on a cable machine rather than doing it on a stairmaster. It's probably going to be better for your hips as well.
I was going to say, the position a stairmaster puts you in anyway, you're not in the best and optimal position for your glutes anyway because you're bent over.
Yeah, risk versus reward. You're going to look like an ultimate dickhead when you fall off the stairmaster as well. Side leg press does fuck all.
Oh my god, I used to going back like literally 4 or 5 years I used to think it was targeting my glutes.
Yeah, just do single leg press or high foot leg press. Again, where I'm coming from with these is, like you just mentioned, I used to be one of the guys who did all these. I've done all these knobhead exercises. Well, when I say knobhead exercises, again, these are relevant to where people's goals are at. And then these are some of the movements that, again, risk versus reward, or what you're actually getting out of the movement for the energy that you're expending into them probably isn't great.
Yeah, and so it could be used elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And what we're trying to address is maybe what's a waste of time for the majority of people.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember that. Not all people, the majority of people. And again, probably another one, and me and Kyle do them every week, but I'm going to say for most people, you probably don't need to do them, is the adduction machine. For most people, are you going to jump on stage and want to see that in a thigh muscle? I'd even argue for a lot of females, you probably do it. They think it probably makes the thigh gap smaller because that's what they're told on social media that they need is a thigh gap, which you don't, by the way. But a lot of people think it makes it smaller. Doesn't make it bigger.
Yeah, the adductor machine, if you're listening, by the way, it's the one that's opposite. So you've got an abductor where you're pushing your legs out and this one pulls your legs in. And 100% a lot of people think you will burn fat on your thighs by doing this, but actually you're growing your thigh muscles, so you're going to make your legs more muscly. That's a really good point, actually, for a lot of people who are listening. That will not target you. You can't target thigh fat anyway. But that is the one that people seem to choose, isn't it, when they're doing like these fad workouts?
I think the thing to remember is for most exercise is to keep it basic.
Yeah, if, basic statement.
If it looks like something from a fucking circus act, just leave it there. Yeah. It's where it belongs, not in your routine.
You're gonna get injured.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that there's maybe a problem in that the basic exercises don't sell as well as the
1,000,000%
ones? And so these people who are trying to sell these products to people, unlike the My Coach School, which preaches the actual the building blocks, the basics, they say actually do this crazy type and you'll get progress to look like me because I'm a genetic freak.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. If someone is making money from it, you sure as hell know that the motivation is not to help, it's to make till. So
that is so true, Cal.
Do the shit we know works consistently and don't worry about what fucking Danny Donut in the corner's doing with his 5 million giant sets in a row and whatever crazy shit he's seeing on Instagram. And unfortunately, for a lot of people who do them, they're just conned into stuff by that people in a position of authority are just really listening to them. It's like that kind of when someone's got a white lab coat on, you think, oh, they know what they're talking about because someone's got a million followers. Well, they know what they're talking about. What's it called? The obedience to authority effect. It's what the Nazis did.
That's intense.
It is intense, but that's what happens. Mm-hmm. There was a study done on it. I can't remember what it was called now. The obedience to authority. It's the one where they put the electric button through someone. It was the Milgram experiment. It was to obedience to authority. Yeah, basically, most people have probably heard the Milgram experiment.
I haven't.
It was where they sat a load of participants down. It was to try and really find out about the Nazi experiment and why people did terrible, terrible things. And it was due to just obeying Hitler because they didn't want to die. So Milgram did an experiment where he had a participant in one room, i.e. a guy sitting on an electric chair. There wasn't.
Oh.
And then they would bring participants into this other room, which was segregated off, so they couldn't see the person in the other room. And they said, I think it was along the lines of every time they get a question wrong, you have to give them an electric shock, and the shocks will go up in volts or electricity each time until it gets to like 10 or something. I'm probably wrong, but this is kind of roughly what it is. And kind of by level 8, they're probably dead. Yeah. So they start going for these questions. The majority of people, I think, in the experiment got to the point where they were dead.
Did they actually die?
And even when they weren't even... Carl, I don't think I'm getting this 100% right, if they were asking questions or not. I don't know if you got it up. But the majority of people kept pressing the buttons even when there was no response from the other room, because the researcher told them, you have to carry on going. And that's what I mean. The obedience to authority was that powerful that they would just carry on.
Did they die? Were they dead?
There's no one in the other room.
Oh, okay.
On the electric chair. Well, there's no electric anyway.
Well, they...
The test and the theory.
No.
Yeah. And that's what came out about the... Everyone thought the Nazis were absolute scum of the earth. Most of them were just soldiers obeying authority because they didn't want to die themselves.
Oh my God. That is... Wow, yeah.
Are you looking at that study now, Carl?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. It seems like you've got the name right perfect. Yeah, the Milgram experiment investigating the obedience to legitimate authority, and found that when pressured by an authority figure, 65% of people would shock another person, even to the point of death.
Yeah,
that's so
intense. It's the same with Instagram. People will look at these people with millions of followers and go, they know what they're talking about. And that's the reason why they were listening to that person, is because they were a scientist in a room in a white lab coat telling them you have to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that like the modern day version of a white lab coat is just being ripped out of your mind with massive shoulders and massive chest?
100%, and having a big following.
Mm.
When you mentioned three of those exercises, I was thinking, I know a specific influencer who I've since met and spoken to who is jacked out of his mind and told me to do behind the neck press, the behind the neck pull down. And I was thinking, you know what, if I do it, I'm going to look like him. And clearly I don't.
But that's the thing, isn't it, as well? The people believe that. Clearly, if I do that, I will look like so-and-so because he does it. The thing is, though, when you look at a lot of people on social media who are jacked, ripped, good at something, they have spent years and years and years doing the basics till they get to that position, and then go, right, fuck me, what sells? What sells is what's different and what looks a bit out of the norm and will pull people around the... ABC, and I'll just take them straight to C, ignore the method, and they just use a stupid shitty thing, and we'll try and get them there because it sells.
I had a comment, you know, on Because I used to just post workouts and then I only post them occasionally now. I remember someone said to me, why are all your workouts like the same exercises? And this was for glutes. I was like, because that's what I do. Yeah. And that's actually what works. You don't need like these crazy ass exercises, especially crazy for your ass, crazy ass. Like a little
pun in the joke there.
And I remember someone said to me and I was thinking, but the basic and staples work. And I'm not going to lie to you. So, yeah. I mean, it's probably why I don't post as many workouts, because I don't have the ability to post like these different exercises. They will all look the same.
Yeah.
So I've nothing to suggest there for you, because I don't post HIIT workouts and I don't make up exercises and put them into one exercise. So
yeah,
probably
there's tons of people who do that though, and there's tons of people on Instagram and online and stuff who do it. And unfortunately, we're just in this.
It's never going to stop. It'll always be there. I think it's just this is where, as a consumer, you need to understand what is right and wrong in a way, or what you wish to consume and what will actually work for you as a person. Essentially, just don't be a sheep and just go with the crowd completely. You have to put yourself first in certain situations, and a lot of the time it is with your personal goals.
Yeah, there's tons of people. I've discovered someone new recently. I'm gonna do a video on them because I can't believe she's got like 2.3 million followers and comes out with the shit that she does. I think that's the thing as well. A lot of people are like, oh, why do you make these videos on people or like calling stuff out? And I think it needs and requires more people to do it, because people who aren't in the fitness industry especially fall for stuff like that all the time. Mm-hmm. If you're in the fitness industry and you're quite educated, you might think, oh, well, that's just, everyone knows that. Honestly, they don't. I saw someone comment on one of our friends' posts the other day. I think he did it was a post about some kind of nutritional content or sugar or something. And someone commented, who was a teacher, on his post and said, we asked the students this week, how do they know like how many calories or how good a certain food is? And then the pupil answered, you'd know by how many sins are in it.
No, that's really not good.
If that's not fucking Weight Watchers culture just sipping into every orifice of this of people's God. Education.
Young kids as well.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
You'd know by how many sins are in it.
You'd pick that up. They'd pick that up from their parents. Yeah. 100%. You wouldn't, because it's not. You'd pick that up from parents, which is, education is always vital. Mm-hmm. Okay, so going on to my second question. This is a very common question, super common question. I think it's still important to always answer because we have a lot of new listeners recently on the podcast. Hi, new listeners. Is it possible to lose fat without losing muscle, without tracking calories? So the whole idea of...
But like body basically.
Body recomposition, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. It's exactly what I've done for most this year, apart from the last 2 weeks, is body recomp. I mean, for me, most of the time it's trying to maintain tissue because I'm not that arse about getting any bigger, but you can definitely lose body fat and build muscle tissue. I think the thing that a lot of people do is they'll look at bodybuilders and go, I need to do a massive bulk and I need to do a massive cut. Mm-hmm. You don't, because what most people do is they spend their life yo-yoing between cycles of bulking and cutting, where people take it from extreme to extreme, which then just means you've got a hell of a lot of work to do and you don't spend much of life with any kind of real stability. Even if you're doing a bit of a bulk or a bit of a cut, there needs to be some kind of bridging period between the two. You can't jump back and forth all the time. And the amount of tissue you actually build from doing huge bulks of just eating shit and looking like a house for a few months but not being able to walk up the stairs or catching your breath and sitting on the toilet dropping absolute bombs for months because you've got so much food going through your digestive system that it's just crying out for a little bit of a break. And then going into a cut where you're the point of starving yourself for months and months on end, to the point where your brain doesn't even function anymore and you don't know your elbow from your arse end, is not the way to go for me. I think the body recomp is a better solution for most people who are looking to add some tissue. Like, the simples of it, let's look at the basics of a body recomp, right? You need some kind of resistance program for weight training, preferably at least 2 or 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. Hitting a protein intake of, I don't know, probably a gram per pound is probably a bit much for most people.
Yeah, 0.8.
Being in a caloric deficit, doesn't have to be mega aggressive to start with. Potentially look at adding cardio in at some point, healthy heart. Like, it's not just all about body fat and muscles. Like, you want to be healthy at the end of the day as well. And I think the other one is, don't do everything at once. Everyone's looking to get there as quick as possible, i.e. be on the lowest calorie intake, train the most amount of days that they can, and put cardio in there straight away and do everything at once for the kitchen sink guy. You wouldn't do that with any other activity or sport that you start, would you?
Mm-hmm.
So why did you do it with body recomp?
Yeah, very valid points. I have a few things to add.
Yeah.
You can lose fat and build muscle at the same time, but it will be a lot harder to do both rather than focusing one at a time. So at the end of the day, you need to understand that this is a long-term goal. It's categorically not going to happen in 1 or 2 months. It is a longer-term goal, and I think you have to understand that you're going to have patience throughout the journey.
By the way, sorry, just intervene. I'm not saying don't do periods of building tissue or cutting down like simultaneously. You can do that.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm saying is just don't be mega extreme with it.
Yeah.
Because with caloric intakes, you don't need to go into massive surpluses.
So the people who can more likely do this are complete beginners. Mm-hmm. So if you've just started, returning after time off, whether it's injury or illness, so you've had an extended period of time off. If you're on PEDs, if you're on PEDs.
Oh yeah, when I was on gear, like I could just bang gym,
eat
whatever and put on muscle and lose fat.
Yeah, this is from a research paper. So
I'm telling you from real life experience.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Great.
And then also, if you're actually starting with high levels of body fat, it will be easier for you. People who should I'm not saying completely don't if you are this person, but to try and not aim for this simultaneously are advanced lifters, or when fat loss is wanted really quickly because you're going to have to be in a high calorie deficit solely, or when muscle gain is wanted quickly. Mm-hmm. Again, you're going to have to be eating a lot of calories if you want it quick. People who are leaner, and those particular people who need a more aggressive deficit for fat loss, because they're just kind of the two different differentiations, because at the end of the day, they're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Fat loss, higher calorie deficit, building muscle, surplus or maintenance.
Yeah. The extremes don't lend themselves to each other.
Yeah, so it's absolutely not impossible. What did you just do then?
I think that's the first podcast top Trump on her.
Oh no, Ben just bumped. You just like lifted up from the side. Boop. But no, they are on opposite ends of the spectrum, which is why we always say to people, we're very open and say, look, you can achieve this 100%. A lot of people have. We've achieved this. However, you need to have patience because it's not a short-term goal. And Ben gave the perfect points before, you know, about protein. You need to be doing resistance training, so progressively overload in different ways. Understand for one that is a slower process, and then just obviously a slight calorie deficit, because if you dive too deep into a deficit, you're pretty much just going to be in a sole fat loss phase.
Well, I think one of the questions there on calorie deficits is, can you do it without tracking calories? Of course you can. That's how I've done most of this year. It's just a case of, if you don't want to track calories, if you can roughly guesstimate stuff and or look at your diet and continue to eat the way that you are now, and either one, reduce portion sizes, or two, what you have to do on a weekly basis if you're not losing weight is look at, okay, what can I drop out this week in order to bring my calories down a little bit without me knowing the numbers? So, okay, shall I drop a snack out, or shall I reduce all portion size by a small amount, and then that will bring me into my deficit, and if I've lost weight next week I'll know. The other good thing a lot of time is to do, as I've spoken to a lot of clients about this recently, is weighing yourself every day. Not for all people this is healthy, by the way, because some people have a poor relationship with the scales, but if you weigh yourself every day, for some people, most people, you'll be able to see data points from through the week, because you could weigh in once a week, and that one day that you weigh in per week is a day that you're at your highest weight, and therefore you never see any lows for the week where you've actually lost weight. That's where it can be a useful tool, especially if you're looking at weight loss. But with body recomp, if you're putting on tissue as well, it can often mean that there's not tons of change on the scale, but there are a lot of compositional changes, so don't forget to take your nudes.
Yeah, 100%, very valid point. And then obviously just with what Ben said there about weighing yourself every day, you just take an average of the week,
or take your lowest point.
Or take the lowest point. Why would you take the lowest point and not an average?
Because that's the lowest point that you've hit so far. So
yeah,
you've hit a new low in body fat. So if you keep taking your lowest points each week,
mm-hmm.
it's still valid.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice. So my last question, simple one, but I think a lot of people have this similar feeling towards this. How to get up easier in the morning?
Ooh, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think obviously one of the most obvious ones is don't be on your phone until 12, 1 a.m.
Okay, in the morning. So what are you doing pre-bed? That is very important.
I think that's how I would get up early in the morning. Yeah. Is
not about getting up early, I guess getting up easier.
Easier. Yeah. Okay, so not always early.
So like, you know, when you just feel like rough as toes getting up in the morning, like you're trying to get up, it's like looking out of piss holes in the snow, you're just feeling groggy, tired, whatever.
Nighttime routine is absolutely essential. So one of the things is low light. So candles or a diffuser or some sort of, I've got a Lumi light and it's really great because it like flashes like a deep red.
Before you go to sleep.
Before I go to sleep. Yeah. Listening to soft music. So I used to listen to just like sleep meditation music, read a book, just get off your phone, get off social media and then get a good night's sleep. I think that's a really beneficial way to feel fresher in the morning.
Yeah.
Then obviously no caffeine probably past like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I mean, 3 o'clock caffeine, probably pushing
caffeine
it.
Caffeine has a half-life of, is it 8 hours?
6 hours, I think.
6 hours, is it?
Yeah. So if you had it at
I could
three,
be wrong. Double check that for us, Carl. It's caffeine half-life again.
Yeah,
so what that means is basically if you have a cup of coffee, which is 200 milligrams of caffeine, then five hours later, it's got a half-life. So 5 hours later, you still have 100 milligrams of caffeine in your system.
Yeah. So a lot of people, and they do actually have coffee at like 4 or 5 o'clock. That's still going to be in your system at 9, 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what time you guys go to bed, but I go to bed at 10:30. And I think that's a wonderful time to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, that's why I worry about people who and it's hard for a lot of people because they have to, who train maybe at 6 or 7 p.m. And have pre-workout at 6.
Yeah.
Especially if you're double scooping like 300 milligrams of caffeine. I mean, you're still talking about 11, 12 o'clock and you've got 150, 100, maybe more milligrams of caffeine in your system.
Yeah. It's just, it's hard, isn't it, as well? Because after work, you would feel fatigued a little bit.
That's where I know we take them at the moment, but that's where for people who are listening, by the way, who are working 9 to 5, which the majority of people are going to be doing, nootropics are good.
Oh yeah, so really good.
Me and Lucy use nootropics. I don't think we spoke about it on the podcast before.
No.
By MyProtein. Again, you can use code MyCoachBenji or code LucyD to save discount.
Mm.
And basically nootropics are a focus based pre-workout.
Really,
they're not
well.
Super high in stimulants. You won't get a crash and you won't feel like this big spike before, but they're more for focus. They were actually originally started being brought out as like gaming stimulants because they helped focus. Again focus, and I use them all the time now because one, I don't like the crash that I get from having super high stimulants anymore, and two, they tend to be a lot better on my stomach as well.
Yeah.
So again, if you're that type of person who's got stomach issues or you're training later on at night, it could be a good option for you.
I think one of the things as well, just with the getting up easier, is having things laid out. So have whatever you're putting on, even if it's like a dressing gown to go downstairs in, have it laid out, have your coffee. I put my cafetiere and mugs out on the side. So in my head, I'm like, oh, it's there. You know, my coffee's waiting for me to have it. I think that's a really good way, just prepare these habits in different ways and make it easier for you and have everything accessible when you're getting up. That is so strange. Why did Ben just itched his nose on the mic?
So firstly, what I'm going to say is sometimes it does not matter how much sleep you've had. You can sometimes just wake up tired. We all wake up tired sometimes. Yeah. When, like sometimes, again, well, what will naturally happen when you wake up is that one, your heart rate is going to be higher because you've gone from a resting state straight away to waking up. Heart rate's going to be higher. Breathing's going to be a bit quicker. It's like starting the engine to your car, just revving itself up to get warm. So how do we do that without sounding like a bashed up Ford Escort in the morning? Like that's the real goal, isn't it? It's to wake up more efficiently and eat and ease our way into the day instead of being stalled into it. Because like this morning, I woke up and felt anxious this morning. Heart was racing, felt shitty, a bit jittery. So again, I think what you said the night before is always a big one. So I don't think you should be doing anything before you go to bed, which is too stimulating. So you want to be relaxing, chill, go for a big piss, squeeze out of number two, because you don't want to be pissing all night.
Who poos at night though? I'm sorry, but that's
some
just
people
not
will do, aren't they? Don't do other shit in bed. Bed should be for the purpose of what it's made for, i.e. you're either fucking in it, sleeping in it, or getting up from it.
Sorry, it's laughing because it...
and then write shit down is a big one for people to go to bed. Because if you've got something on your mind, put on your notes, probably don't be on your phone, writing it down
a little notepad,
can get a lot of ideas out of your head or get things off your chest, which maybe sometimes you'll go to bed mulling over all the time. Stop playing foot on the table.
I've got really stiff knees. So I just had to extend.
I haven't. I've got shins under it, you know. I haven't got shin pads on today. So there are things before you go to bed which are big. But then in the morning, again, thinking about this before you even go to bed is about morning gratitudes. So what? So ultimately, like, what are you getting up for? Why are you getting up in the morning? What are you looking forward to in your day? They're big things of what's going to help you get out of bed easier.
I think one of the things as well there, because I remember we spoke about this, if you, I guess if you're struggling with your mental health, that can be harder for people.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And it's more so these gratitudes don't need to be ridiculous things. It could be, I'm really grateful that the sky is blue today. I'm about to have a really nice coffee. They don't need to be extortionate, do they? Yeah. They can be. But I guess they don't always need to be.
Speaking about mental health, I started using the gratitudes more when my mental health was really, really bad. Mm. And when I was going through that really bad eating disorder phase. And they helped me a lot. Because when there's negative things going on in life sometimes, it's so easy to really, really focus in on them. And having those gratitudes to focus on in the morning, think about things that are around me, think about you, think about friends, family, were real things that took my mind away from, oh, this is the worst thing going on. Whereas I had a lot of positives going on in life. I couldn't see them because they were just tainted by this thing that was going on my brain, yeah. So another thing, again, is obviously sleep. So most of the time, if you wake up feeling shitty or tired, it can be due to REM sleep or not getting enough of it. So it all starts with getting enough quality sleep, firstly. So trying to get 78, Jesus, who's sleeping for 78 hours? Seven to 8 hour sleep is what's recommended. It's not always possible for everyone. Mm. It's not how it always goes down, but 7 to 8 is a good number to try and hit.
I had 9 hours of sleep last night, everybody.
How?
I don't know.
We weren't even in bed for 9 hours. Checked. What were you doing? Fell asleep watching Harry Potter downstairs.
Ah. Yes, yeah. I was just checking my Whoop to see. I mean, only 9 hours is extra. I've never had 9 hours in ages. Yeah. 7 to 8 is a really, really positive aim, though.
So a couple of quick fire tips now.
Oh, gosh, I thought you were about to do questions at me.
Foods before bed. Try not having something too heavy carb, i.e. quick sugars. It's just going to make you feel stimulated. Mm-hmm. Get enough water in before you go to bed, but don't drink enough so you're pissing like a racehorse all night, i.e. Lucy Davis, hint, hint.
I think I go to the toilet 4 times in the night.
Yeah, it was a good job I unblocked the toilet in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sleep mode on your phone.
Yes.
Because if you have your phone on normal, even if it just vibrate, those small little vibrations or noises can easily wake you up from sleep.
But it dims it as well for you. Yeah. It makes it a bit orangey.
Don't snooze. Don't snooze the alarm. Lucy Davis.
Do you know why?
You'll just enter a new sleep cycle.
Yeah.
And it'll disrupt it. So every time you disrupt the sleep cycle, it's bad. So you're going to enter a new sleep cycle every time you're snoozing it. So you get like a little 8 minute window where your body's like, I'm going back to sleep. And it's disrupted again. So try and not snooze the alarm. Get up.
How great is it though when you snooze and it's like, I've got 5 more minutes. Morning. They don't do that though, guys.
Morning. So food that you're having in the morning. I'm not going to dictate to people here, like, it's personal preference. Either have food or you don't. If you want to fast, I fast. I enjoy it. Helps me get more shit done. And it makes, or if you're going to have something, don't have something in the morning which is super high sugar, where it's going to spike your insulin levels right away, and then you're going to crash by the time you get into work or by the time you start doing the tasks that you want to do. Try different drinks, even if you've been a big coffee drinker for a while. I've been having peppermint tea in the morning now because mainly my stomach doesn't agree with it. So experiment with different drinks in the morning, because some people will have coffee and feel like shit from it. Mm-hmm. So don't carry on drinking it just because it's become habit.
Habit, yeah.
Get some sunlight in straight away, increase your serotonin, get your windows open, and eat the frog. What's eat the frog mean, Lucy Davis?
I don't know. Have you told me this?
Yeah, we spoke about it in the gym this morning.
Eat the frog. Give me a clue.
Get your hardest task done first thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like you knew it? Like, have we just spoke about it an hour ago?
I always eat the frog. Did we have that conversation?
Yeah, in the gym. You talking about doing cardio before weights?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
So eat the frog first thing in the morning. And all that means is basically do your hard task when you've got the most energy and mental clarity in the day. So try and get it done first thing. And also, it'll make you feel better because it's that sense of task completion as well. It's not always easy to do, but even if you do it every now and again. And then the last thing is same wake-up times every day, if you can.
Yeah, that is actually a powerful one.
Because otherwise it just affects your circadian rhythm. It's also great for sleep hygiene as well, and your body just loves consistency.
We'll also try and go to bed at the same time as well.
Yeah. Any consistency around sleep is the best thing. I know it's not always possible because we have these things called lives, but as consistent as you can. It doesn't mean you have to have 100% consistency. Just try and be more consistent.
Helps. Yeah. Yeah. The final question, and I think this is a really good question actually, because it can, I guess it applies to two things. So I can't train due to injury and I feel guilty. And I guess this is that two-sided sword where it's I can't train or due to illness. Mm-hmm. So I had a few questions about not being able to train and having the feelings of guilt associated to it. And it's a really tricky one, isn't it, with injury from the start, because we do need to say every single injury is different personal, and some could be like a lifelong injury, or some could be a few months or a week. It could be a small thing. So we just need to say it's important to know that everyone's rehab and injury is completely personal to them. We're not physios.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was so long-winded. Can you just repeat just the question for me, please?
I was just giving a little disclaimer. Yeah. I can't train due to injury and I feel guilty.
The singular best thing I think to remember with this type of question is, when you're asking yourself it, is perspective. Mm. And what I mean by that is, whenever something happens to you, it's the worst thing that could happen in the world. It is the worst. So i.e., and again, I don't mean this in a nasty way. When I got that hamstring injury, I couldn't run for 3 or 4 weeks. 3 or 4 weeks in the grand scheme of things, and how long I'll be running for the rest of my life, is like a drop in the ocean. And then I watched Matt Does Fitness, one of our previous guests. He's out for potentially up to a year with an Achilles rupture. And I looked at that and went, I'm moaning about a hamstring injury. I'm not saying, by the way, everyone's issues or problems aren't important, that you should look at other people and go, oh, my issue doesn't matter, because your issue does matter. But sometimes getting perspective helps. And the other thing by perspective, what I mean by that is, like I just repeated before, is that let's look at your life cycle of training. So let's say, I think I've repeated this before, let's say you train, and this is being super sort of optimistic. Mm. You train 40 weeks in the year. Mm-hmm. In 10 years, that's 400 weeks of the year. Yeah? Mm. That's technically 10 years, that's 400 weeks.
You're asking the wrong
person. And every times that by five, Kyle, quick maths, what's 5 times 400?
Well, 2,000?
There's 52 weeks in a year, right?
Yeah, but if people are training for 40 weeks in a year.
All right, 5 times what?
400.
20,000?
20,000. So yeah, let's just say for average, if you did a lot of training, you're training 20,000 weeks out of the year.
2,000.
Is it?
5 times 400, 2,000.
Yeah. So let's say you're training 2,000 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's a lot of weeks.
That's a lot of weeks. And you've got to take, let's just say 4 weeks. Let's just say you've got to take a month off. Mm. That's 4 weeks out of 2,000 weeks that you've got to take off. Mm. How much impact is that going to have overall? How much?
It's probably not a lot.
Nothing. It's not going to do anything.
No, it won't touch the size.
So the fact that you've got to take this 4 weeks off, I know when you look short term, feels like it's the end of the world. But let's take a step back. Let's have some perspective. Let's look at things with a telescope rather than a magnifying glass. And let's really assess how much of an impact it's going to have if you just take some time off to rest and recover. Because a lot of time with illness and injury as well, you've already got stress on your body from it trying to recover. Then you're trying to put more stress on it from either physically or mentally, mm-hmm. to get back in the gym and do stuff. So rest up and take some perspective. Just from a personal note, I took 4 months off when I had meningitis. And look at me now. I'm still at house. Just saying.
It is really true though what you said there, because when it happens at the time, or an injury, or if it's an ongoing injury and it's suddenly triggered, you have to do what's best for your health and your body. And at the end of the day, rest and recovery always comes out on top, because what usually happens if you don't rest and you don't recover, i.e. you don't take time off, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And you'll probably end up taking more time off later down the line that probably could have been managed better. And I think with injury, it's really, really important. So if you're ill, you tend to go to the GP, you go to the doctor. If you're injured, people sometimes just don't do, whoa, I thought it was going to fall. some people just kind of ignore it, or they try and fix it themselves. I personally wouldn't recommend that.
Or they ask for advice for people who don't know.
Ask advice for people who don't know, yeah. And we're very stern on that. If someone asks us, we say, look, we can't advise you. Sorry, go and see a physio. And I would advise that if you do have an injury that you actually want to be rehabbed properly and correctly and you'll come back stronger, is to actually go and see a physiotherapist, because they are the people who can help you. It's their job at the end of the day. And one of the things as well is, Matt, for example, he could be out for an extended period of time, but he's been training upper body. So he's been working with his injury and what he can do. He's learning to manage it. Now, I have really bad hips, one in particular. And because I've managed my rehab so well, I can still run, which is awesome. And I can still train. There's certain things that I can't really squat at the moment. It's fine, no problem. For this period of time, I'll take it out of my program, because I'm learning how to deal with my injury in the best way possible. Ben, sorry. It's really, really off-putting. What? Go to the toilet.
It's natural. It's like the wind outside.
No, I know, but it just makes me laugh. So learning to manage and train with an injury, not against it. It's not possible in every circumstance if it's like a whole body situation or something's gone wrong, but getting that external help from someone can be really important. And also, I think it helps put your mindset in quite a positive direction, because they always give you exercises to do and to learn from. Like Debs is a great example. She's been out for 6-7 months now from a bike, but she's doing her rehab every single day and it's getting better and better and better, and she's improving in different ways. Even though she's not back where she was, she's always improving. So have a new focus.
I think what you said there is very important.
Which one?
That about the about seeing someone to get guidance on getting better. Because if you've got those steps, you're still making progress, which at the end of the day is what we all want to do. And if you're making progress, you're going to get those little wins, that endorphin, that serotonin release from making those small wins and making progress with your rehab.
Yeah. And I guess like if you can't train for an extended period of time, work on things like you need to stop now. Ben's bumping.
Got IBS, Kate.
Stop. Lose my trail of thought.
I'm going to get a little badge that just says IBS on it, just so people know.
Stop.
the Joker has that joke gone and passes to people.
My trail of thought has just completely gone in one ear.
I do apologize.
My point there, that was fake. My point there was, if you're out for an extended period of time, focus more so on nutrition. For example, put your... Or pick up a different hobby. Start writing, drawing, play musical instrument. I don't know. But if you can distract yourself in a different way and also do something else you enjoy, or if it is your fitness journey, focus a bit more on nutrition. Well, start cooking more.
Couldn't run 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Use the bike.
There you go. Perfect example.
Just work around an injury is always the best thing.
Yeah. As long as you're not putting the injury at risk. But as we said, go and seek professional help.
Yeah.
That's doctor, why they're there. See a doctor, physio. I'd always go and see a physio over a doctor with injury.
No, but I mean, if people are ill and there's genuine reasons go and see a doctor.
Yeah, 100%. So they were our questions today, and I thought they were pretty fucking fantastic.
Yeah, thought they were great. Is there any questions that you guys want answered as well when we do these future episodes? Please feel free to drop them into the YouTube video, and we will check over them when we come into our next Q&A podcast setup.
Yeah, definitely. And as always, and we always appreciate it, is leaving reviews on the podcast. You can do this on Apple Podcasts. If you go to the search bar and type in the Not So Fit Couple podcast, then it comes up. We've been able to leave a review. I think it's the same with Spotify now, and obviously YouTube. Just subscribe, because all the fun stuff's on YouTube, because look. YouTube people.
And also, if you enjoy the podcast, you're going to enjoy the Micro School app. So
check
out link out in the description. You've got a 7-day free trial, absolutely zero to lose.
Yeah.
And very lastly, thank you to this week's sponsors, which is Coro.
This is empty now.
Yeah, absolutely loving them. Again, leave a link in the description for those and a discount code of NotSoFit5.
Have an awesome week, and we will catch you in next week's episode.
Bye, guys.
Bye.